going to read around 8 poems, and can you hear me okay? Am I near enough?
No.
No.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better. That's better.
Sorry. This poem is called Beast is Dead, Long Live the Beast. And it was sparked off by seeing a movie, an old movie, based on Beauty and the Beast, you know, so it's a famous story. And it was inspired by the bit where the beast transforms into the prince, the real man, you know. And I just thought it was such a sad part of the movie. And I think even in the thing, I think the actress looked kind of, gosh, you know. You had this beast roaming around and being all kind of mysterious. And then at the end, he changes into this, like...
this boring man.
Man.
So. Safe, boring man, please.
And so, the beast is dead, long live the beast. It was the difference between us that got me at first. It was vast, unambiguous. He held me as if I were glass, saw mere delicacy as I sharpened my blade for the feast, eyeing his girth like a wife at the butcher's. All of you, I thought. I want all of you. He watched with a soft look. I preferred smashed crystal, the roars or nights I heard welch, spied blood on his loose gums, remorse on his muzzle. He presumed I was sweet, a double-centred chocolate treat, longing for my own breed, not something entirely different. Then, oh hell, he told me, true love's vow will break this curse. I took a scented soak, pondered his request, recalled how I saddled his back toward the estate, my knuckles white on matted fur, my womb tumbling, tumbling. He sighed and paced, till the third morning on which he collapsed, the shot, his light almost out. It's now or never. I had a smoke, considered. His eyes would remain the same, and those howls, they came from within. Truly, I said, just in the nick, I love this beast, and promise to be his. Far smoulder to reveal fine skin, smooth limbs, a face as pretty as my own. I couldn't watch, it was grotesque. I left the prince to admire his pale fingers, a pleased tilt to his lips. In the woods I got lost, galloped for hours, for days, devoured small creatures, tossed our entrails to the fox. Circles didn't rest. Beast, where was my beast? How I missed his stride, his tattered fur, his terrible voice. I swore to die before sacrificing life to that pretty boy. In the end he trapped me, Mr. Ruby Ring's pointed slippers, fetched a posse, 12 hounds and a net. Looked at me as if we never sweat in the dark, toward the moon, swallowed stars. I masquerade for my escape. It's easier by day. When I dream, I wake with blood on my dress. The house frowns. Stone Venus is contemptuous, bitch. He awaits an answer to his latest request, marriage. Bite me, baby, I guess. This next one is called Frida Kahlo, Eyes Meeting the Blue Wall. And it's an introduction. Frida Kahlo, Eyes Meeting the Blue Wall of my semi-D, in bare-necked upbraiding majesty. How luscious is my pain, she proclaims, and I can produce it for you again and again and again. Prefer me bleeding in the red dress? Or the yellow one, like a bone for a token. Just love the way I left absolutely nothing unspoken. My torment glued to tin votives for eternity, my pudenda pushing its way through a bouquet of bad memories. Pray, gringo, pray for me. Pick me clean, but pray for me. And this next one is a long poem, and it's the poem Kitty that won a prize for, and it's funny because it was written for my gran aunt who's dead a long time, and she would have hated the fact that I wrote a poem. But she would have loved that I wrote something for her, but she would have hated it. Kitty, we were the same height before you died, me 15 to your 65. It was April and it snowed. A stroke sent you to Nice Hospital. The last time I would see you alive. You, lover only of austerity and Christ, that nurse tied a blue ribbon to your graying hair, lost your glasses. As I left, she lifted your wrist to orchestrate a wave, ordered in her sharp voice, "Say goodbye now, say goodbye." On seeing you, tried on a smile. Once the centre of my world, you are now close to forgotten. And like the prayers you used to say for the soul nearest release, I pray for a glimpse of you, I the atheist. For you are at the edge of memory, somewhere no one wants to be, about to disappear on me. I strain to recall your voice, hear nothing but the kettle rattling to a steam, the children playing outside. See your hands buttering a thick slab of bread and jam for Corrine. I see those hands reach out, beak-like, closed over something. Something I'm trying to give back. Go on, take it. The treasures in your heavy dresser, handkerchiefs, doilies, the kinds of things gifted to a maiden aunt. A bottle of Schiaparelli, shocking pink. Can I have that? Of course you can. It never opens. I conjure up the scent of faded bergamot from the neck of that tiny flask of locked glass. And the things you'd say? All the nevers. Never speak ill of a nun or a priest. Never write anything down. Never do anything you wouldn't like your mother to see you doing. Like what, I'd ask, cheeky eyes. Like what? Stop, you'll be struck dead. It doesn't sound like you and I should have gotten on at all, but we did. What do I really know of you? Your love, and the brief details a child can hold, aunt, seamstress, the word singer stretched in gold on the belly of the insect-shaped machine that wore down your sight. Once you had hoped to be a nun, your sister would throw her eyes up to heaven, that one up there, praying again. I often saw you, lips in silent movement to the Sacred Heart, sore knees on the carcass. You whipped sweets from your crossover apron like a grand aunt magician. I saw some the same as yours, in a Galway department store, navy with cherry and white flowers, a pattern I'd often laid my cheek on when I was sorry for being bold. The shop fabrics felt crisp to the touch, nowhere near the homespun softness you wore, day in, day out, year in, year out, so I would hold you instead, here, your hair pinned at the temples, coiled into flat spirals, gentle kiss curls awaiting release. Hold you as you were when you were not yet stooped, forever taller than me. This next poem is called, it was called Sleeping Beauty's Take, but it's called Bad Fairy now. And it's another fairy tale type poem, and it's from the point of view of Sleeping Beauty, who was the beauty who slept for a long time because she pricked her finger on a spinning wheel. The bad fairy. Thank you. I went up and the bad fairy followed. Like, hello, what do you think two consenting adults were doing all that time? Casting spells on each other. So, beauty, she said. I can't believe you've never seen one of these. Would you like to touch it? It won't hurt. Hey, I was young, curious. What a night. And afterwards, such solace. Those years were the best. The ones I slept and slept while brambles cracked and thorns knit and every tongue in the palace had a kip. They say I pricked my finger. Pricked indeed. My father hid all the pricks from me. Overvigilant. He should have just invited a prick in. Feel the fear. That kind of thing. Because for all the good fairies, the bad one will find you in the end. This one is called The Ice Queen, and it's one of those, sometimes you write a poem and you're not quite sure what it means until maybe months or weeks later, and it hasn't happened with this one yet. I still don't know what it's called. The Ice Queen. With no time to double back, I cut a clear path, easy to track. Exhaustion bends my mind to see shadows flit between the broken lines of trees. I feel her, feel her lurk in winter's rare amber. She came to me last night. There were mere inches between us. She seemed almost gentle as she froze my breath.
"My word,"
she said, and plucked the purse from her mouth. It was soft and brown as a mouse. She pressed it to my cheek. I was too tired to flinch. Her arm was blue and barbed with scars. That was the last time I slept. Now I search in circles, keeping my distance from her crackling presence. So I have three more poems, and four, actually. This one is called I Was Swallowed by a Harry Clark Window, and it's a true story. I do a writing workshop in a college that has a Harry Clark window in the church, so I went in there to get away from the writing workshop. And the Harry Clark window is actually, when you see them, they're actually very, very dark. You have to, you know, it depends on the time of day, so they're quite dark. They're quite gem-like, but they're quite dark. But the longer you stand in front of them, the more luminous they become, you know. You know, and maybe it was the time of day, but the light, they just become brighter and brighter the more you stand in front of them, and the more you see all the details, they become alive as if they're working on you. So I wanted to, I just stood underneath it and I wrote, but I wrote maybe 5 or 6 pages to try and capture the feeling of being in front of a piece of art that's in front of you, and it suddenly feels like you're part of it. And so this is one of those. Some poems are kind of gifted, they come on one, this one didn't, so it was edited down to try and catch that feeling that art can give you, you know. So I was swallowed by a Harry Clark window. All that flesh, so exquisitely etched, decked in magenta, cushion, cobalt, linen, even the halos are mantling. And oh, so sweet are those cool palms that peak from viridian pashminas to prey and bless. I'm on the side altar, reverent, gazing, mouth open, keeping clear of the sacristy that will have its diehards, when the scalding tangerine of St. John's robe pours down my throat. Burnt, I douse my tongue in a panel of inky night, grey stars, how they bite and bite and bite. Fully digested, I stretch on a glass horizon that peaks like a breast. Oh, all here is holy, and all here is sex. And so, from my last poem, it's a poem called Sleep Talking, and it was inspired in a writing workshop where we were just asked the prompt. Just, you know, last night the prompt was, "Where do you go when you sleep?" And this is one of those poems that just came all of in one piece. And I think it could equally be, I did figure out what this one means, and I think it could equally be, where do you go when you write? And this is where, definitely for me, where I go when I write. So, sleep talking. Blue black fur skins every part of me that moves, and I move quickly from mother bed to a maze of paths glazed with scattered crumbs of glass. A creature whose voice I can't hear, whose face I can't see, is teaching me to read with my feet. This is a time not to think. Travelling deep is tough. It's always winter. No, love isn't enough in the Tinker Palace of memory. Bird women squawk overhead, a carnival of forgotten babble. Baubles swing from their claws, clear spheres pregnant with sea, moon and sky. They swoop, their eyes are yellow with history. Look back. Who knew there were so many of us? I see beasts, unfettered freaks, feathered furred and taking corners until undergrowth gives way to cliff face. Blinding sapphire waves break us, plunge us, one by one into an amniotic ice blue sea, where we settle to an alert rest. If you look now, I'm still, except for a fishy underlid flicker, sleeping, not bottom of the ocean, breathing water, permeable. Suckling the rushes of some early second when a secret runs past my fingertips, I listen. Thank you very much. Thank you.